Good morning and happy Friday. I'm Cheryl Walker with the News Gazette. Today is Friday, January the 3rd, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with article headline, Plenty of Cash, University of Illinois. Plenty of cash. Army storied history has seen it serve as hub for military registration innovation. This story is written by Luke Taylor. That's itaylor@newsgazette.com. For as much ground as the Armory covers on the University of Illinois campus, it shouldn't be any surprise that it takes a lot of work to keep up the 111-year-old building. In 2023 alone, over 530 work orders were submitted for the building, says facilities and service spokesman Steve Brutweiser. A primary difference between the Armory and most of the other facilities on the Urbana campus is a large number of departments located within a facility and the wide variety of uses by those occupants, Brutweiser says. The Armory has a little bit of everything, from spaces intended for innovation and tech to dozens of offices and classrooms for academic departments and the ROTC alike. The center of the building, originally built as a drill hall for ROTC cadets, now hosts a track used by athletes in training, though today's cadets still get their use out of it. Work orders handled by facilities and service includes everything from urgent repairs to preventative maintenance, custodial work, improvements, and more. Some of the work affects all designees of the building, like recent roof upgrades or future plans for upgrades to the east and west ends of the facility's barrel vault with stucco and curtain wall replacements. That project will preserve and revitalize historic military mandate. The giant structure known as the Armory today is actually the third one at the U of I. Constructed as military training programs continue to outgrow the spaces built for them. There are so many ways the military has influenced this institution, says Joe Rank, a 1969 U of I graduate who went on to a 20-year career in the Navy that included time as an ROTC instructor at the U of I from 1972 to 74. He's also been vice president of the Alumni Association and is so interested in him and the historical ties between the military and the university that he taught a class about it at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. Rank says today, people often overlook the part of the Morrill Land Grant Act that said each university would include instruction on military tactics. Like most schools, the U of I interpret that as a mandatory inclusion and required all undergraduate male students to participate in military instruction for at least 2 years until 1963. Like most college bands, the Marching Alumni owe their start to the military, too. Students form a military band in 1868 to play at parades and reviews, but Rank says they may have had ulterior motives. Band members were exempt from military drill. Even though Rank attended shortly after compulsory military training had ended, he participated in both the ROTC and the band. It wasn't a requirement, but Vietnam was going on, so you might as well hedge your bets, he says. The older guys or our role models were all cadets. Well, maybe not all of them. Rank remembers an alternate Pride of the Illini lyric sung by his older bandmates. We are marching for dear old Illini to get out of the ROTC. Band or no band, the school needed a space for military education. The first Armory was a mechanic and military hall, a two-story building constructed in 1871 that was 128 feet long and 88 feet wide. The first floor was dedicated to engineering sciences, but the second was entirely occupied by the drill hall. Towers had an armorer's shop, a military model room, an artillery room, and a band room. The school outgrew the space quickly, so a second drill hall was built in 1890. This was fortunate because the first burned down in 1899. This drill hall was the first to be known as the Armory, but today is known as Kenny Jim Annex. Construction on the current Armory began in 1912 with a 200-by-394-foot drill floor and 3,000 seats for spectators and a price of $228,119, which is about $7.3 million in today's dollars. By 1918, there were 3,385 cadets training on campus, but the building was also sometimes used for conventions and assemblies for non-military purposes. It also hosted registration each semester before the internet streamlined that process. Before online registration, it was like a stockyard, Rank said. You went in on one side, were digested, and came out on the other. Non-military groups didn't move in at all at once. Rank says after compulsory ROTC participation ended and fewer cadets joined up each year, the ROTC staff shrank and didn't need as many offices. The space they moved out of became temporary offices for the other departments on campus, then were eventually taken over for their use completely. No matter its current status, Rank is happy to see the building still in use after years of sending cadets out to military service. I'm pleasantly surprised to see 110-year-old building hasn't been razed, he says. I think about all the people who have been through there. ROTC is still the focus. The ROTC in the U of I isn't nearly as massive today, with only around 200 students participating, but it still takes up a large portion of the Army. There are offices, training spaces, lounges available for the Army, Navy, and Air Force branches, along hallways decorated with murals and photos commemorating the long history of the organization. Above the entrance of the Naval, Left, and Air Force ROTC areas inside the U of I Armory below, the main drill hall was packed with students during registration as seen in the 1980s until it went digital. These photographs were submitted by Robin Schultz of the News Gazette. City of Champaign Township Stride Shelter Tax Referendum headed for a second try in April. Voters rejected proposed rate increase in November. This story is written by Jana Weiserman. That's jweiserman at newsgazette.com. The City of Champaign Township officials are hoping the second time's a charm when it comes to efforts to enact a 428% increase in its property tax rate to support the Stride's Low Barrier Homeless Shelter. At its next meeting, set for 7 p.m. Tuesday in the Champaign City Council chambers, the Township Board will vote on a resolution to put a referendum on the ballot for April 1st consolidation election. A previous referendum in the November general election failed by a margin of 57% to 43%, with 17,389 voters coming out against the measure and 13,083 in favor. When asked how he felt about the chances of a different outcome this time around, Township Supervisor Kyle Patterson replied, "I'm hopeful that we can get the message out to voters, the importance of it." He added, "The outcome is up to the voters. The proposed question is nearly identical to what voters saw in November. It asks residents of the property tax rate currently set at 4.17 cents for every 100 of equalized access value should be increased by 17.86 cents to $22.03 per 100 of equalized access value to maintain the Stride Low Barrier Shelter and provide for needs within the assessor's office. Township officials said during the last referendum effort that these needs included increased general assistance, increased rental assistance, and additional staffing for the assessor's office. The question proposed for the April 1st ballot states that the tax increase, if placed on the ballot and approved by voters, will be expected to generate approximately $437 million in additional revenue. It's estimated that the increase would cost the owners of a single-family home valued at $100,000. An additional $60.22 per year. Overpass work continues to despite winter weather. Interstate 57/74 interchange. This story is written by Dave Hinton. That's D Hinton at newsgazette.com. The weather might be frightful, but work has continued on the Interstate 57/74 interchange work in Champaign, although at a slower clip. Ken Crawford, a project implementation engineer with the Illinois Department of Transportation, said the work has been focused on concrete for the deck of the bridge carrying the ramp from westbound I-74 to southbound I-57. 2 weeks ago, we were able to start pouring the bridge deck, Crawford said. We plan to continue to do that this winter as the temperatures allow. Low temperature restrictions, however, have prompted the work stop in recent days. IDOT crews are diligent about observing the forecast before deciding whether to resume concrete work. They have poured 2 100-foot segments and have 25 left. Typically, we need to wait 3 days after pour before we can pour another segment because we want to get the strength of the concrete relatively established before work begins on the next section, Crawford said. Work continues Monday on the flyover ramp connecting westbound Interstate 74 to southbound I-57 left. and eastbound I-74 to northbound I-57 right, as seen from the newly opened ramp connecting westbound I-74 to northbound I-57 in Champaign. This photograph was provided by Robin Schultz of the News Gazette. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy staff writer Lou Taylor. Bellying up on Fridays, we'll spotlight the men and women serving up cold ones in conversation in our neck of the woods. Let us know about your favorite bartender by emailing itaylor@newsgazette.com. For the first bartender of 2025 and 75th in the series, it seems like the right time to highlight someone from Paris, Illinois, my hometown. That's where Terry Hyatt has been serving up beers for the last 3 years at Lot 50 Brewing, a craft brewery just off the square. This is the second leg of his bartending career, which had first started in the 80s and has now become a source of extra cash during his retirement. I just love talking to people, especially the people that come down in front, out of town, Hyatt said. I've always liked to ask people where they're from and get to talking to them. That's just what I like to do. He says to put a visit on your calendar for the summer. In the winter, things slow down a bit, but summer is just a fantastic place to come to. With beers and sitting outside, Hyatt said, the Honeybee Festival is another time to visit and one of Hyatt's favorite times to work at the bar. Lot 50 brings in some live music, so folks in town for the festival have an evening destination. It's usually crazy there, and the crazier, the busier, and the better, Hyatt said. But if you decide to go before the weather warms up, Lot 50 has a few TVs, shuffleboard, and a whole stash of board games to keep you entertained. The beer menu rotates, but Hyatt currently recommends Maze and Confused, which he describes as a Mexican lager. If he isn't bartending, Hyatt probably is watching the Illini play football or basketball. He was certainly rooting for them on Thursday night. Lotteries. Thursday Illinois Lottery pick 3 midday was 286. Pick 3 evening was 880. Pick 4 midday 3977. Pick 4 evening 7474. Lucky Day Lotto midday 915 28 40 45. Lucky Day Lotto evening 111 16 26 27. The Lotto 2021 20, 35 38 42 46 and the estimated jackpot is 8 million. Thursday Hoosier Lottery daily 3 midday is 925. Daily 4 midday is 6474 and estimated Lotto jackpot is 35.5 million. Today's Mega Millions estimated jackpot is 42 million. Saturday's Powerball estimated jackpot is 200 million. Need the numbers we didn't have by press time? Contact Illinois Lottery information. That's 1-800-252-1775, illinoislottery.com. Hoosier Lottery information is 1-800-95-LOTTO, hoosierlottery.com. Nation and world. Las Vegas attack, a normal guy. Decorated soldier appears to have traveled alone in rented Cybertruck. Shot self in head inside vehicle just before explosion outside Trump Hotel. Las Vegas. The highly decorated Army soldier inside a Tesla Cybertruck packed with fireworks that exploded outside Trump International Hotel in Las Vegas shot himself in the head just before a detonation, authorities said Thursday. The explosion caused minor injuries to 7 people, but virtually no damage to the hotel. Clark County Sheriff Kevin McHall said Matthew Livesburg, a 37-year-old Green Beret, likely planned a more damaging attack, but the steel-sided vehicle absorbed much of the force from the crudely built explosive. Damage from the blast was mostly limited to the interior of the truck because the explosion vented out and up and didn't hit the Trump Hotel doors just a few feet away, the sheriff said. The level of sophistication is not what we would have expected from an individual with this type of military experience, said Kenny Cooper, a special agent in charge for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Authorities are still working to determine a motive. It's not lost on us that it isn't in front of the Trump building, that it is a Tesla vehicle, but we don't have information at this point that definitely tells us or suggests it was because of this particular ideology, said Spencer Evans, the Las Vegas FBI's special agent in charge. Lives Berger had recently returned from an overseas assignment in Germany and was on approval leave when he died, according to the U.S. official. A law enforcement official said investigators learned through interviews that he may have gotten into a fight with his wife about relationship issues shortly before he rented the Tesla and bought the guns. The official spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to discuss the ongoing investigation. Among the charred items found inside the truck were a handgun, a Leibsburg's feed, another firearm, a number of fireworks, a passport, a military ID, credit cards, an iPhone, a smartwatch. Mac Hall said, authorities said both guns were purchased legally. Investigators identified the vehicle's driver, who was burned beyond recognition as Leibsberger of Colorado Springs, Colorado, on Thursday. The cause of death was suicide by gunshot, according to the Clark County Coroner. Leibsberger served in the Green Berets, highly trained special forces who worked to counter terrorism abroad and train partners. He has served in the Army since 2006, rising through the ranks with a long career of overseas assignments, deploying twice to Afghanistan and serving in Ukraine, Pakistan, Georgia, and Congo, said the Army. He was awarded a total of 5 Bronze Stars, including one with a Valor device for courage under fire, a combat infantry badge, and an Army Commendation Medal with Valor. Mikhail said Leibsberg rented the Tesla electric vehicle in Denver on Saturday, and the sheriff displayed a map showing that it was charged in the Colorado town of Monument near Colorado Springs on Monday. On New Year's Eve, it was charged in Trinidad, Colorado, and 3 towns in New Mexico along the Interstate 40 corridor. Then on Wednesday, the day of the explosion, it was charged in 3 Arizona towns before video showed it on the Las Vegas Strip about 7:30 a.m. McCall said investigators obtained charging station photos showing Leibsberg was the individual that was driving the vehicle and was alone. We're not aware of any other suspects involved in this particular case, the sheriff said. Authorities searched a townhouse in Colorado Springs on Thursday as part of the investigation. Neighbors said the man who lived there had a wife and a baby and did not give any sign of posing a danger to anyone. Cindy Hulick, who lived diagonally across the narrow street separating their home, said she last saw the man she knew as Matthew about 2 weeks ago when he asked her if she had a tool he needed to fix the SUV he was working on. He was a normal guy, says Helwick, who said the last saw his wife and baby earlier this week. Helwick noted that people in the townhome on the hill with views of the mountains don't interact much except for when they're getting the mail or walking their dogs. The explosion of the truck packed with fireworks, mortars, and camp fuel canisters came hours around 42-year-old Shami Din Bahar Jabbar rammed a truck into a crowd in New Orleans, famed French Quarter, early on New Year's Day, killing at least 15 people before being shot to death by police. First responders wearing hazmat gear investigated the Tesla Cybertruck that exploded Wednesday in front of the entrance to the Trump International Hotel and Tower in Las Vegas, injuring 7 people in the vicinity. A 37-year-old Green Beret inside the fireworks packed vehicle allegedly shot himself in the head just before the detonation, killing himself. This story was written by Ethan Miller. The photos were provided by Ethan Miller, Getty Images, TNC. Biden administration. Biden honors 2 leaders of January 6th inquiry, 18 others. By Kylene Long and Arlene Superville, Associated Press. President Joe Biden on Thursday awarded the second highest civilian medal to Liz Cheney and Benny Thompson, leaders of the congressional investigation to the Capitol riot, who Donald Trump has said should be jailed for their roles in their inquiry. Biden awarded the Presidential Citizens Medal to 20 people in a ceremony in the East Room, including Americans who fought for marriage equality, a pioneer in treating wounded soldiers, and 2 of the president's longtime friends, former Senator Ted Kaufman, a Democrat of Delaware, and Chris Dodd, a Democrat from Connecticut. Together, you embody the central truths. We're a great nation because we're good people, he said. Our democracy begins and ends with the duties of citizenship. That's our work for the ages, and it's what all you embody. Biden last year honored people who were involved in defending the Capitol from a mob of angry Trump supporters on January 6, 2021, or who helped safeguard the will of American voters during the 2020 presidential election when Trump tried and failed to overturn the results. Cheney, a Republican former Wyoming congresswoman, and Representative Thompson, a Mississippi Democrat, led the House committee that investigated the insurrection. The committee's final report asserted that Trump criminally engaged in a multi-part conspiracy to overturn the lawful results of the election. He lost to Biden and failed to act to stop his supporters from attacking the Capitol. Thompson wrote that Trump lit that fire. The audience interrupted in loud cheers and said when Cheney took the stage. Biden clapped her hand and gave her the medal. The announcer said she was being given it for putting the American people over party. Cheney, who lost her seat in the GOP primary in August of 2022, later said she would vote for Democratic Democrat Kamala Harris in the 2024 presidential race and campaign, with the Democratic nominee raising Trump's ire. Biden has been considering whether to offer preemptive pardons to Cheney and others Trump has targeted. Thompson, who also received a standing ovation, was recognized for his lifelong dedication to safeguarding our Constitution. Trump, who won the 2024 election and will take office January 20th, still refuses to back away from his lies about the 2020 presidential race and has said he would pardon the rioters once he is back in the White House. During an interview with NBC's Meet the Press, the president-elect said that Cheney did something that's inexcusable, along with Thompson. And the people on the Unselect Committee of Political Thugs and, you know, creeps claiming without evidence they deleted and destroyed testimony they collected. Honestly, they should go to jail, he said. Cheney and Thompson were an embarrassment to this country for their conduct on the committee, Trump's communications director, Stephen Chung, asserted. Biden also awarded the medal to attorney Mary Bonito, who fought to legalize same-sex marriage, and Evan Wolfson, a leader of the marriage equality movement. Other honorees included Frank Butler, who set new standards for using tourniquets on war injuries, Diane Carlson Evans, an Army nurse during the Vietnam War who founded the Vietnam's Women Memorial Foundation, and Eleanor Smil, an activist who led women's rights protests in the 1970s and fought for equal pay. He bestowed the honor to photographer Bobby Sager, academics Thomas Valley and Paula Wallace, and Francis Visco, the president of the National Breast Cancer Coalition. Other former lawmakers honored included former Senator Bill Bradley, a Democrat of New Jersey, former Senator Nancy Kassebaum, the first woman to represent Kansas, and former Representative Carolyn McCarthy, a Democrat from New York, who championed gun safety measures after her son and husband were shot to death. After he presented the awards, he went back to the lectern to ask lawmakers in the room to stand, as well as John Kerry, a former U.S. Senator and Biden's first climate envoy. "Let's remember our work continues," he said the room after he thanked the families in attendance for the support they gave to the nominees. "We've got a lot more work to do to keep this going." Biden honored four people posthumously: Joseph Galloway, a former war correspondent who wrote about the first major battle in Vietnam in the book We Were Soldiers Once, and Young, civil rights advocate and attorney Louis Lorenzo Redding, former Delaware Judge Colin Seitz, and Midasu Andu Tusmani, who was held with other Japanese Americans during World War II and challenged the detention. The Presidential Citizens Medal was created by President Richard Nixon in 1969 and is the country's second highest civilian honor after the President's Medal of Freedom. It recognizes people who perform exemplary deeds of service for the country or their fellow citizens. New Orleans attack, not the man his family knew. Army veterans' apparent path to radicalization followed three divorces, struggling businesses in Texas. Jabari. Shazmi Din Jabari grew up in Texas, joined the Army, and eventually settled in Houston, where he spun up a real estate business and made $120,000 a year for one of the world's largest consulting firms. But the 42-year-old U.S. citizen, who authorities say plowed a rented truck through the New Year's revelers in New Orleans before being shot and killed by police, also faced pressures. He finalized a third divorce in 2022, saying in filings he couldn't pay his mortgage and his business was losing money. On Thursday, authorities and relatives were still piecing together why Jabari barreled through a crowd and a Ford F-150 on Bourbon Street, killing 14 revelers and injuring at least 30 others. Officials said the attack was inspired by the Islamic State group, making it one of the deadliest IS-inspired assaults on U.S. soil in years. FBI officials said Jabari posted five videos to his Facebook account in the hours before the attack, in which he aligned himself with ISIS. Authorities also found an Islamic State flag on the truck used in the attack early Wednesday. "It's completely contradictory to who he was and how his family and his friends know him," Abdurrar Rahim Jabari, one of his brothers, told the Associated Press on Thursday at his home in Beaumont, about 90 miles outside of Houston. The 24-year-old said his older brother had increasingly isolated himself from family and friends in the last few years, but he hadn't seen any signs of radicalization when they talked. He said it had been a few months since he had seen his brother in person and a few weeks since they had talked on the phone. Nothing about his demeanor seemed to be off. He didn't seem to be angry or anything like that. He was just calm, well-mannered, well-tempered self, the young brother said. Law enforcement officials said that after driving into the Bourbon Street crowd and crashing the truck, Jabbar exited the car wearing a ballistic vest and helmet and fired at police, injuring at least two before he was shot and killed by officers returning fire. Army Corps and other public records pieced together a picture of a man who had been stationed or lived in multiple states, including North Carolina, Texas, Georgia, and Alaska, had been married multiple times and seemed to be experiencing financial difficulties as he tried to adjust to civilian life. Jabbar joined the Army in 2007, serving on active duty in human resources and information technology and deploying to Afghanistan from 2009 to 2010. The service said he transferred to the Army Reserve in 2015 and left in 2020 with the rank of Staff Sergeant. A spokesperson for Georgia State University confirmed Jabbar attended the school from 2015 to 2017 and graduated with a bachelor's degree in computer information systems in 2017. He had been married at least three times over the last two decades and had had at least three children who were mentioned in divorce and custody agreements. His two most recent marriages in Georgia and Texas each lasted about 3 years, according to the court documents. Dwayne Marsh, who was married to one of Jabbar's ex-wives, told the New York Times that Jabbar had been acting erratically in recent months. Marsh said he and his wife had stopped allowing the two daughters she shared with Jabbar to spend time with him. The AP left a message at the number listed in Marsh on Thursday. Messages were also left for Jabbar's two other ex-wives at their numbers or with their attorneys. The AP also left messages for Jabbar's mother that were not returned as of Thursday afternoon. Abdul Rahim Jabbar said her father had declined to speak with reporters. Divorce records also showed Jabbar faced a deteriorating financial situation in January of 2022. Jabbar said he was $27,000 behind on a house payment and wanted to quickly finalize the divorce. I have exhausted all means of bringing the loan current other than a loan modification, leaving us no alternative but to sell the house or allow it to go into foreclosure, he wrote in January 2022. Email to his now ex-wife's attorney. His businesses were struggling too. One business, Blue Meadow Properties, LLC, lost about $28,000 in 2021. Two other businesses he started, Jabbar Real Estate Holdings, LLC, and BDQ, L3C, weren't worth anything. He had also accumulated $16,000 in credit card debt because of expenses like attorney fees, according to the email. Court documents show he was making about $10,000 a month doing business development and other work for consulting firm Delati in 2022. On Wednesday, police blocked access to a Houston neighborhood where Jabbar's last address was listed, a small white mobile home in the gated community where ducks and goats were roaming the grass. On Thursday, the FBI said it had finished a search of the area but did not release more details. Despite the tumult indicated by court documents, Abdul Rahim Jabbar said his brother hadn't shown any outward signs of distress or anger about his relationships. We will take a short break and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette. Please stay tuned. I'm Shore Walker. This is January the 3rd, 2025.